أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، وما ينطق عن الهوى إن هو إلا وحي يوحى. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. رمضان مبارك to the Ummah of Muhammad. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. May we all be the recipient of the blessings, mercy and forgiveness of Allah in this generous month. In this series, we will be presenting a number of ayat from the Quran, starting with ayah number 26 of Surah Al-Baqarah. This is the second chapter in the Quran, in the first part, Juz 1, chapter 2, Surah Al-Baqarah, the cow, ayah number 26. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. إن الله لا يستحي أن يضرب مثلا ما بعوضة فما فوقها، فأما الذين آمنوا فيعلمون أنه الحق من ربهم، وأما الذين كفروا فيقولون ماذا أراد الله بهذا مثلا، يضل به كثيرا ويهدي به كثيرا، وما يضل به إلا الفاسقين. The English translation, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Indeed, Allah is not timid to present an example, that of a gnat, or what is smaller than that. And those who have believed know that it is the truth from their Lord. But as those who disbelieve, they say, what did Allah intend by this as an example? He misleads many thereby and guides many thereby. And he misleads the fasiqun, the transgressors. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is using an analogy of the gnat. Indeed, Allah is not timid to present an example, that of a gnat, or what is smaller than that. A gnat is a two-winged insect, and within this family, it contains the flies and mosquitoes. So he's presenting the example, and he is specifically referring to the believers and disbelievers' reaction to this example or analogy. So analogies are used generally in teaching to explain complex, abstract things in more physical way. It uses two things that seem to be dissimilar and find similarities between them to explain what is intended. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has used analogy throughout the Quran, and he's used animals to explain situations that pertain to believers and disbelievers. For example, in Surah Al-Ankabut, the spider, the chapter of the spider, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala uses the house of the spider to reflect upon the weakness of the house that disbelievers built for themselves in this world, that it's flimsy, it will be destroyed easily, it is not a permanent home. So when the disbelievers listen to these analogies, their reaction to this analogy is that of sarcasm almost. They look at these analogies as inappropriate. Their criticism of it is that how can this come from such a majestic a God, if he uses such insignificant examples to explain such important topics? This was the criticism of the disbelievers. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala directly refers to this criticism and says Allah is not embarrassed or shy to give an example as small and as insignificant or seemingly insignificant as a mosquito, and even something smaller than that. The ayah continues to say that those who have believed know that it is the truth from their Lord. So the believers know that these examples, irrespective of what content they are and how these analogies are put forward, what examples are given, they are the truth from Allah. They use it, they understand it, they see it as a tool for them to understand what is beyond their understanding. But those who disbelieve, they say, what did Allah intend by this as an example? This is not a question to try and find an answer. This is a question to put doubt in the mind regarding the authenticity of, or the truthfulness of, of the Quran, of Islam, of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's like saying, why on earth would a God give an example about a mosquito or using a mosquito? How insignificant is that? So the disbelievers were trying to justify their position, their disbelief, by using these examples as a way to discredit Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The interesting thing, though, that reflects the lack of understanding of the disbelievers and their inability to see the truth is that the mosquito or the gnat in general contain very, very complex creatures despite their size and how slow they might be and how short their life might be. Just interesting facts about the mosquitoes. There are 3,500 species of mosquitoes. They drink 3 times their weight in blood. They lay 300 eggs at a time. They can smell human breath. They've got receptors on their antennas that detect carbon dioxide, CO2, release when we exhale, when the breath is released. They choose their victims, the human beings, based on the smell of the sweat. So the sweat is composed of a number of chemicals, and based on what they favor, they will choose the person that they will bite. They use heat sensors around their mouth parts to detect the heat, the temperature of the blood, and they choose their victim on how hot they like their meal to be. So they're also considered as the deadliest animal on earth. Check it out. They're actually considered the deadliest animal on earth because the fact they kill millions of people every year because they transmit malaria. So these are interesting facts about the mosquitoes that reflect that despite their size, their complexity, the way that they operate, their creation, their impact on human beings is huge. They have boggled the minds of scientists to try and figure out how they can control their breeding, how can they stop the spread of the disease and put an end to the spread of malaria. So that reminds me, of course, of the hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salam. When he refers to the mosquito, he refers to it as an intriguing creation, that if all creatures, and I'm paraphrasing here, if all creatures and species, including human beings, jointly try to create this mosquito, this gnat, they cannot bring it into being. They can't figure out the way it's been created, and they are unable to destroy it, which is really the truth. For thousands and millions of years, really, human beings have struggled with the mosquito and haven't been able to overcome it. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala also puts us in a position where we need to reflect on His creation, on what seems to be so insignificant around us, we take it for granted, and contemplate the magnificence of His ability, and that His power, His elegance, His magnificence extend to all things, whether big or small, high or low. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, His might, His sovereignty extends to all of them. And the argument that this example is inappropriate for the glorious dignity of the Lord doesn't really have a basis. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talks about guidance and misguidance, that those who know the truth will be guided, and those who are sarcastic about the whole thing and try to find ways to discredit the Quran and are themselves transgressors, they will not find any guidance. The interesting thing is that the following ayah number 27 explains who are these transgressors. What are the qualities of those transgressors? There are 3 things that define the transgressors. The first thing is that they break Allah's covenant after they've agreed to it and ratified it. The second thing is that they disconnect or cut what Allah has ordered to be joined. And the third thing is they make corruption and destruction in the land. So they break promises that they give to Allah. they cut what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has ordained or ordered us to join, and they cause corruption in the land. These are the losers. These are the fasiqun. These are the ones who transgress. Fasiqeen, the word used in the Quran to describe these disbelievers, fasiqeen, comes from the root word fasaq. And fasaqa defines the, goes back to defining the seed in a date fruit when it exits its center and goes out of the date. So it has gone out of the right path. It has gone out of where it's supposed to be. It has transgressed. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala links guidance to our choices. If we reject guidance, if we close our eyes and ears and heart to the truth, then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will take away the device of guidance. He will take away the tawfiq. He will withdraw his grace. And therefore, any example that's given is not seen as an example for guidance, but as an example for misguidance. On the other hand, if we have an open mind, if our intention is clear, if our heart is pure and we're looking for the truth, then the examples that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is giving, the analogies he's giving, the evidence that he's presenting is a form of guidance for us. So our perception of guidance and misguidance is linked to our own choices and our own decision to reject or accept the truth. As human beings, we have preconceived ideas about faith and about what's right and wrong. We have our own set of morality and values. And so when we approach faith, when we approach the Quran, and when we come with this, with these sets of values, if we come in a way that is arrogant, it's very difficult for us to really see the truth, because whatever we see that conflicts with our values, that conflicts with our morality, we will judge it as not the truth. Whereas if we come in search of the truth and we realize that whatever we've had is influenced by our surroundings, then it is more likely for us to be objective in assessing the truth. And that's a really important point, particularly in today's age when we're conditioned to believe things. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala make us of those who search for the truth sincerely, and may we be guided to the truth by the hands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through His examples and through the Quran during this holy month of Ramadan. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.